In March, Wilf U.S. delegates attended a meeting in San Francisco with several women's peace organizations. The public continues to encourage like-minded organizations to come together to collaborate more closely, and our fiscal sponsor, Peace Development Fund, arranged for and funded this meeting to help us find some common ground together. We particularly connected with the Women Across the DMZ organization and its leader, Christine Ahn.
In May 2015, on the 70th anniversary of Korea's division into two separate states by Cold War powers, 30 international women peacemakers from around the world walked with thousands of Korean women, North and South, to call for three goals: a formal end to the Korean War, reunification of families, and women's leadership in the peace process. During that time, they held international peace symposiums in Pyongyang and Seoul, where they listened to Korean women and shared ideas of mobilizing women to bring an end to war and violent conflict. On May 24, 2015, together they bravely crossed the two-mile-wide demilitarized zone, DMZ, that separates millions of Korean families as a symbolic act of peace. Since then, the organization has continued to work for peace on the Korean Peninsula. One of the ways in which they state that they will work towards their goal is through building capacity and partnerships for greater impact and sustainability.
Tonight we've asked Christine Ahn of Women Across the DMZ to talk about their campaign, Mobilizing Women Globally for Peace in Korea, and to think about how our two organizations might support the cause of peace together. Following this presentation, we'll take questions from members, and you can get on a stack by raising number one on your phone keypad as soon as we call for questions. Welcome, Christine, to our monthly One Wilf call. Can you add any updates to our description of your organization, which we lifted from your website, or did we get it pretty well?
Oh, you did it so beautifully. Thank you so much for many of you for joining us, and many large acts and small acts. And, you know, I know that the WILF USA chapter of WILF International we haven't had the opportunity to work more closely together. So I hope this is the beginning of a longer and more fruitful collaboration with the U.S. women, because we really need you, and we're really at a very critical juncture in the struggle to end the longest standing U.S. conflict. So it's an exciting time for us. I have been doing this work for almost two decades. I may not look so old, but I'm in my mid-40s, and I have been doing this work for some time. And to be honest with you, even though things may seem so dismal with the Trump administration on every possible issue in the world, the Korea issue is one in which we have not had a breakthrough, and we have one now. And, you know, it has less to do with Trump and the Trump administration and more to do with who is in power in South Korea, President Moon Jae-in. And sadly, that window is not going to stay open for that much longer. He is in office till 2022. And but we have a rare situation where you have the leader of North Korea, the leader of South Korea, and strangely enough, the leader of the United States, who wants to see a deal. So my presentation with you, I know I only have 15 minutes, so maybe I will get started right away, if that sounds good, unless you had anything else you wanted to share.
We're not going to cut you off, Christine. If you need more time, you can go ahead and take it.
Okay. Well, I'm cognizant that we're on many different time zones, so... for those of you that are able to follow the screen, the first slide is us when we actually crossed the DMZ. Gloria Steinem, who was with us that day, she was, I think, 80, 81 when she did this walk with us. And she said that was the longest day of her life. And you can imagine, you know, most people, when they go to North Korea, they kind of travel back through Pyongyang or back through China to go to South Korea. And it was really quite a head trip to go from North Korea, which, you know, in many ways is 50 years behind South Korea, especially where we were in Kaesong when we crossed, to come to, you know, the most wired country in the world in South Korea. So it was a very difficult and an emotionally exhausting journey, but it was a quite a remarkable thing that women, ordinary women, women committed to peace can do. So this was us. Next slide. I thought I would just quickly go through a little bit of the historical context. As feminists, I think, you know, we want to understand how we got to this moment today. And this is an image of Korea. This is a Korea that my parents were probably, you know, among the millions of Koreans in a crowd like that. This was at the end of World War II, from 1910 to 1945. Korea had been colonized by Japan. My parents grew up in that era. They were not allowed to speak Korean. They could only do it in home. There were no Korean newspapers allowed. They had to take Japanese names. We know that, you know, the half of the rice that was harvested went to Japan in the pursuit of building empire. So this was the day when Japan was defeated by the United States, as we know, through the nuclear bombs that were dropped on Nagasaki and Hiroshima. But the Koreans were celebrating their liberation. And sadly, that was soon quickly eclipsed by the division. Next slide. This is the 38th parallel. This was drawn by two young State Department officers, one that included Dean Rusk, who later became a Secretary of State, and Charles Bonesteel. They were given the assignment by the White House to draw a line, basically dividing Korea. As we know, Korea became the front end of the Cold War. And so north of the 38th went to the Soviets and south went to the Americans. So there was a Soviet and a U.S. military occupation from 1945 to 48. And then when we put into power, we being the United States, Syngman Rhee, who, you know, basically waged a very anti-democracy campaign, put into prison those that they considered communists, which, you know, were socialists, leftists, pro-trade, pro-independence, and put into power a lot of the Koreans that had been working for the police, that had been collaborating with the Japanese. And so it really was a very horrific period for Korea, which, you know, at that time was a remarkable grassroots movement of people's committees preparing for independence. Next slide.
I just want to remind people that if you're not seeing the full picture, you can scroll down as Christine is talking.
And so this is, and so, I mean, I'm sorry this for this very abbreviated history, but there's a lot I want to cover on this presentation, which is, you know, how do we get from there to now and the historic opportunity that we're in, and what can we do as ordinary citizens and, you know, women's peace movements? And so, anyway, there was separate elections in 1948. And the Republic of Korea was established in the South, and then the Democratic People's Republic of Korea was established in the North. The founder of the North Korean state was Kim Il-sung, who is the grandfather of Kim Jong-un, who is the leader now. And so, you know, that obviously began a struggle for who will reunify the country. Will it be a U.S.-backed Syngman Rhee, or will it be Kim Il-sung, who, you know, basically used the threat of war to consolidate power in the North. And so in 1950, there was the brutal war. That's from 1950 to 53. I found this image while kind of scouring the Reuters photos, and I couldn't believe that I had never seen this image. We see a lot of images of aerial shots of U.S., B-52 bombers dropping, or you see the aftermath of bombs dropped, the devastation of thatched roofs. But I was really drawn to this picture because it really captures the devastation that was unleashed, especially on the northern part of the Korean Peninsula. 80% of North Korea was bombed to bits. This is exactly what it looked like to have an indiscriminate U.S. bombing campaign. You have testimony from U.S. generals in Congress where they say there is nothing, there are no more targets. That is how devastating the air raids were. I mean, you didn't need nuclear bombs. You basically completely carpet bombed the country. Next slide. And so basically the war finally, after 3 years, came to a truce. It came to a ceasefire. There was an armistice that was signed. It was signed by the United States on behalf of the UN command, which included, it was the first coalition of the willing 17 countries under the UN command. And then the North Koreans signed on behalf of North Korea and also the Chinese Voluntary People's Army. And that was July 27th, 1953. And in that armistice agreement, there is a promise, a commitment to return back within 90 days to return to negotiate a political settlement. And that has not happened. So we are basically still at war with North Korea 60 some plus years later. So next slide. So just fast forward, I was working at the Global Fund for Women at the time that I came up with this idea of the Women's Peace Walk across the DMZ. And I mean, really, our movement, Women Cross DMZ and the women's movement to really see an end to the war, is inspired by other women's peace movements. And I had seen the film by Abigail Disney of the courageous work of Liberian women to cross religious lines to bring an end to the 17-year civil war in Liberia. And that is basically what led me to begin to organize this women's peace movement globally to bring an end to the war. Next slide. And so I began this journey to figure out, well, how are we going to end this war? How are women going to do it? And I began to do some research, and I found that this is an image, this is in Panmunjom, the famous blue buildings that are in the DMZ. And this is North and South Korean women meeting. And on the right side is the South Korean delegation, and on the left side is the North Korean women. And I found that the first meeting of North and South Korean women, so the war ended in 1953, the first meeting of North and South Korean women took place in 1991. And it actually took place in Tokyo because a member of the Japanese Diet brought the North and South Korean women together because they heard a plea from a South Korean women's peace activist who said, this is in 1989, she actually said this, and that's actually the woman in the far right in the kind of maroon top. She said at a Northeast Asia disarmament conference that the arms race in Northeast Asia will continue to go unabated unless we bring an end to the Korean War. And it's amazing that that was in 1989. And it's how many years later, how many decades later, we're in the same exact situation. And so anyway, I was deeply inspired. And I found that there have been moments in over the last 20, 30 years that North and South Korean women have come together. And, during what is known as the Sunshine Era from 1997 to 2007 was a period of inter-Korean peace between North and South Korea. And this was a moment when the two North and South Korean women, but when there were times of impasse, and in 2015, that was a time of impasse where North and South Korea, because it was under conservative rule in South Korea, all that progress had come to a screeching halt. And so I figured we need to do something to help break that impasse. Just as the Japanese woman helped to bring the North and South Korean women, how about we, especially me, as a Korean American with a U.S. passport and citizenship, we have to do something, especially given the U.S.'s historic responsibility in dividing the Korean Peninsula and maintaining 30,000 troops in South Korea and basically completely destroying North Korea. We have total responsibility to help bring an end to this war. So fast forward, next slide. So I found this crazy story in my inbox that five New Zealanders, they crossed the DMZ and from North to South Korea. And so that was in 2013. And I said, oh my God, if they can do it, women can do this, calling for an end to the Korean War. Next slide. And so here's me and my daughter Jeju when she was 22 months, and my colleague Hejong Park, who is on my left. We traveled to North Korea in February of 2014. I had sent an email to the North Korean mission at the UN and pitched the idea. It just so happened that the guy, the counselor that was working there, I had met on my very first trip to North Korea in 2004. And this is a meeting in which I got a memorandum of agreement from them saying that, yes, they have agreed to allow us to have a women's peace symposium in Pyongyang and that they would allow us to cross the DMZ. So that began the journey of trying to negotiate with the North Koreans, the South Koreans, and of course, the UN command, which is really the US forces in Korea, to negotiate the crossing of the women. And that was quite the journey. This is when we announced that we would do the crossing. We hadn't heard from South Korea yet. That was Park Geun-hye at the time, the woman president who was a neocon. And she was stonewalling us, but we got permission from the DMZ, from the UN command at the time. He said, yes, if the North and South Koreans give you approval, then of course we will. And we, of course, used that to say, oh, the U.S. has given us approval. So it was now on South Korea to allow us to cross. Next slide. Then here we are. We got to China. This is in Beijing. We held a press conference before we flew to Pyongyang, and we had gotten approval to do the crossing. Next slide. So here we were. We went to Pyongyang. We held the peace symposium with about 250 North Korean women. And not only did we hear from the North Korean women, but the North Korean women could hear from these extraordinary women who were just ordinary women activists who were working to end the wars in their country. So that's Lema Gaboe from Liberia on the left, Marae McGuire from Northern Ireland. In the middle is Chi Chung-hee. She's the woman from the Korea Socialist Women's Union from North Korea. That's Patricia Guerrero from Colombia, Medea Benjamin, and the woman to the right is a researcher on the comfort women issue. They heard stories of ordinary women from around the world mobilizing to bring an end to wars in their countries. Next slide. And we held this amazing symposium. And at the end, we had prepared this quilt where we, Gwyn Kirk, who many of you may know, was a longtime Wolf member, had this idea of doing this women's art form where we, in Korea, the jogakbo is a quilt that is, you know, used, obviously, you know, using scraps of fabric from, you know, family members' lives. And so we decided to prepare quadrants. We brought a quilt from the U.S. Made by the international women. The Korean diaspora women had prepared a quadrant. The South Korean women had prepared a quadrant. And the North Korean women had prepared a quadrant of the quilt. And we basically sewed it back together as a symbolic gesture. And, you know, it sounds a little bit corny, but it was so powerful. And the North Korean women began to sing as we were stitching this song called We Our Hope Is for Reunification. And it just, like, the room just flooded with tears and hugs and embrace. And, you know, this is why women do this work. Next slide. And so the next day, here we were. This is at the Reunification Tower. This is on the outskirts of Pyongyang on the road to the DMZ. And 5,000 North Korean women met us to join us for a peace walk there. Next slide. And then we traveled south a few hours to Kaesong, which is a historic capital. And we marched with 2,000 women in Kaesong on the cobblestone streets. Next slide. And I really am moved by this photo because unlike Pyongyang, where it was like the wide boulevard, and where, you know, you kind of felt, you know, where are the people? Where are the ordinary people? Well, in Kaesong, you're kind of walking through the cobblestone streets, and you could see the people standing out, like, you know, hanging outside of their apartment windows, you know. This is this old woman who was like crying. She was cheering us on, and, you know, I just looked at her and thought, oh my God, she must be in her 70s or 80s. She must have been from Korea that before was divided, and what this meant to them, you know, that these women were coming from around the world to support the reunification of Korea. It was a really moving and powerful action. Next slide. And so here we were. We crossed the DMZ. We were forced to go by bus in some ways, which was great. It was like a hot, hot day, I think in the 90s. And we had to walk for at least 3 miles along the southern border of the DMZ to get to the place that we were having the festival. And so here we were walking along the barbed wire fences of the DMZ on the southern border in Paju. Next slide. 3,000 South Korean women came to greet us. And then we held a parallel peace symposium in Seoul. This is at the city hall. And, you know, in many ways, it's the same story, but also a different story. You know, you hear stories of women impacted by the sexual violence committed by the U.S. soldiers around the camp towns. You know, it's similar and very different, the experiences of how the unresolved war is still impacting women on both sides of the DMZ. Next slide. And so, you know, we have been using this argument. We know now, with decades of research, of what women's peace movements, what women's organizations' participation, civil society participation in peace process, what it yields. And so we know that in a major study that of 182 signed peace accords, an agreement was 35% more likely to last 15 years if women participated. And so we have been basically saying this message time and time and again. Next slide. We have, you know, even the Trump administration, we've been engaging them and said, you signed this Women, Peace, and Security Act of 2017, saying that women must be included to prevent and end and rebuild after conflict. And this is the former congressman who used to be the chair of the House Foreign Relations Committee from Orange County, but he didn't run again. But even he said, you know, I mean, here you have the most conservative men even coming to agree with us that women's inclusion is vital for peacemaking. Next slide. And so here we are several years later. And in 2019, this March, we launched a global campaign, Korea Peace Now, Women Mobilizing to End the Korean War. And four big organizations came together, WILTS International, Nobel Women's Initiative, and a coalition of South Korean women's groups, the Korean Women's Movement for Peace. We all joined together to launch this campaign. Next slide. What do we want to achieve? Well, we want to see a peace agreement. But these are five things that we hope to accomplish by the end of 2020, or we want to have impacted. One is a peace-building process to end the Korean War with a treaty, with an agreement, some kind of normalized relations. to, we want to see the tangible demilitarization. And it is happening right now between North and South Korea. They've removed landmines. They have taken down guard posts. They have linked the trains that connect from North to South Korea. So we are seeing progress on that. We want to see women's leadership and gender-based analysis of both at the governmental level and at the civil society level. We want to see the lifting of sanctions that are harming innocent North Koreans. Right now, a World Food Program report came out saying that 10 million North Koreans are food insecure. They're teetering on the edge of starvation. And that's because of the sanctions. I mean, just as those of you talk about the conditions in Cuba, it's the very same in North Korea. And we need to be doing the work of redefining what we mean by security. And this is obviously, Wilt has been championing this for a century. We need to keep doing this. And this is a centerpiece of what we're trying to do with this campaign. Next slide. And so, you know, we have been doing that. We have been organizing events, webinars, actions. Education is a cornerstone of this campaign. Next slide. We have been trying to reframe the debate on the media, and we have been successful. We've been able to reach the mainstream media. I was on the Samantha Bee Show, to Democracy Now!, to BBC and MSNBC. I mean, you know, it's kind of amazing to be able to be critical of the military-industrial complex while doing it on mainstream TV. Next slide. And to change the narrative about North Korea. We have also believe in doing advocacy and engaging. So up on the other left, upper left, we went to the White House. I brought a delegation of families who are divided. I brought a delegation of humanitarian aid workers and a guy whose father is still missing in North Korea. And in the Singapore Declaration, which is an anniversary of it today, they included in the Trump-Kim Jong-un declaration that they would work to repatriate the remains of missing POWs from the Korean War. And so that is a result of us basically going to meet. That guy is Matthew Pottinger, who is the National Security Council Director for Asia for the Trump administration. It is absolutely nuts for us to be doing this, but we believe in talking to anybody. That's the second picture is us meeting with the Ministry of Unification in South Korea. And then the next slide is me, and you may recognize Ann Wright. We sat down with the U.S. Embassy in Seoul. And the last picture is me with Chrystia Freeland. She's the foreign minister in Canada. Next slide. We keep trying to get coverage and trying to get our op-eds in mainstream media. Next slide. Just quickly go through this. We believe in bringing women together. So we brought a big delegation to South Korea last year to support the inter-Korean peace process. We've brought women from North and South Korea. So we had to do it in a third-party country. So we met in Indonesia. That's the upper right picture. And then last December, we brought women from Northeast Asia in Beijing to talk about how women from the region can support an end to the Korean War and build a network of women from the region to also challenge the crazy militarization and the looming war between the U.S. and China. Next slide. And yeah, we believe in walking and talking. So we have been doing that for since 2015. Every year we've held a peace walk. We didn't do one this year, but you know, we haven't missed a single year since 2015. Next slide. We try to influence the influencers. So I did get a chance to meet President Carter, and we got him to make a statement about needing to end the Korean War. And, you know, this is, he's been a big advocate now for this congressional resolution. Next slide. So this is, And then this is a picture of us from upper left is in Congress. The bottom left is at the UN. We held events at the Council on Foreign Relations. The middle picture is in Ottawa at the Parliament. The upper right is in Seoul at the launch. And at the bottom right is us meeting with Senator Sanders. But this is basically from this past March. We have launched the campaign, and we're really excited to work with WILT. Next slide. And so the cornerstone piece that we are moving to try to end the Korean War in the United States is through a resolution that we helped draft, and we now have 33 co-sponsors. And I tell you, having done work in Congress, anything to do with North Korea is basically a non-starter. And so for us to now have 33 co-sponsors of this resolution to call for an end to the Korean War with a peace agreement is really phenomenal. And so that's where I want to end this presentation today is we are at this historic opportunity. We basically have come, we want to try to get to 100 co-sponsors by the end of this year. We believe we have a roadmap to get there. And this is where having some kind of collaboration with WILT, with the WILT USA women and the chapters, is going to be really helpful to us as we try to build out the grassroots regional chapters across the country. We have 9 right now, and it would be great, next slide, for WILT members to join us in this effort to see an end to the Korean War. So one is it would be great for everyone on this call to urge your member of Congress to sponsor, to co-sponsor the House Resolution 152 to end the Korean War with a peace agreement. I have a letter that I will send to Darian that is a template. For example, I'm going to Washington, D.C. next week. I'm meeting with my congressman, Ed Case, from Honolulu, and I have gotten about 100 prominent community, academic, Korean-American peace activists to urge him to be a co-sponsor of the resolution. So I will send that to you guys so that you can hopefully circulate that and also send it to some of your members of Congress. But I will also send to Darian a whip list that we have generated. We hired a lobbyist. Her name is Elizabeth Beavers. She was the National Policy Director for Indivisible. That was an organization that was formed right after the election of Trump as a way as they created the Citizen's Guide to influencing Congress. And so she is incredibly savvy, and she helped us kind of develop this whip list. And as you know, we've been really able to start moving some members of Congress. The second is we have formed Korea Peace Now regional chapters across the U.S. So now we have them in New York City, we have them in Philadelphia, in Boston, Atlanta, D.C., San Francisco Bay Area, in Los Angeles, in Chicago, and now we're forming them in Hawaii and also in Seattle. So it would be great if any of the WILT members wanted to get involved as WILT USA into those regional chapters to kind of, this is really a grassroots citizens movement. This is not, I mean, of course, we obviously depend on the grasshopper's power, you know, celebrity power is somebody like Gloria Steinem, but really these regional chapters are, you know, incredibly inspiring citizens movements. And then the last is we are doing a big national mobilization around July 27th, which is the anniversary of the Armistice Agreement. And we would really love for you guys to either help join or participate in some of these events around the country. So I'm going to end with a three-minute, next slide, Michael, a three-minute video, which is a documentary that is being made right now and hopefully will be finished by this fall. And it would be great if WILT wanted to partner with us to organize some screenings next year or later this year. So this is just a three-minute documentary about the women in peacebuilding work for to end the Korean War.
We're specifically calling for the end to the Korean War. Hamunjeom is the site where the Armistice Agreement was signed. And that's where we would like to cross.
How would you address skeptics who say you guys are naive or this could be used by North Korean government as part of their propaganda?
The path of no contact has not worked.
Yeah.
And so we feel that it's important that we try reaching out, friendship, contact, walking, doing with our physical selves what we hope can be done politically.
Many women from North and South Korea and around the world are walking to invite all concerned to begin a new chapter in Korean history.
I know that was really choppy, but I think you get the gist of the documentary, and I think it'll be a great educational tool to help inspire and mobilize other women around the country to get involved in this movement. So thank you so much for letting me take so much of your time, and I'll take any questions.
Thank you so much, Christine. That was really inspiring. Your work on this issue and being able to unite so many different women from different organizations and different nations is, I'm not sure how you did that. Congratulations. It must have been a lot of work, and obviously it's reaping a lot of benefit. So on behalf of Wealth and probably just on behalf of Keith, we thank you for your efforts.
Thank you.
So if you want to ask a question or make suggestions, press number 1 on your phone keypad. We'll call on you in order. And please say your name and your city and state. So press number 1 now if you want to ask a question of either Christine or Darian.
Well, I had a question. I wondered if Christine could tell us the role that Wealth International played in supporting all this wonderful organizing, just so we can appreciate what our mother organization was able to, what help they were able to provide.
Well, Wealth International, the president, Kozue Akibayashi, has she's been with Women Across DMZ from the beginning, and obviously her being from Japan is hugely symbolic. And so when we thought about forming this international campaign, they were there with us to help shape what the campaign would look like. And so we have done kind of a division of labor where Women Across DMZ would really focus on the U.S. advocacy work, and Nobel Women's Initiative would really help at the UN level and some key countries, and the South Korean women would obviously be mobilizing in South Korea. And Wilt would be helping us with doing some UN advocacy, and obviously with the 38 chapters around the world to kind of help mobilize women globally. And so that's basically, they, as part of the campaign, hired a Korean campaigner. Her name is Yugyeon. I believe that her and Ko Zue did a call last month, kind of updating the international Wilt about the campaign. And so, yeah, they've been active. Ray Atchison, Ko Yugyeon as the campaigner, Kozue Akibayashi from Japan, and Maria Butler from Geneva. They have been working closely with us to both identify some targets within the United Nations and also some key countries that we think could be moved to support the Korea peace process, but also trying to identify some strategies to get the UN Security Council to lift some of the sanctions against North Korea. So that's basically how the Wilt International has been, a core partner to the campaign.
Great, thank you. Betty Traynor, you have your hand up. Betty from San Francisco.
Hello. First, I wanted to congratulate Christine. I mean, just marvelous to hear what you've done. Of course, we in San Francisco and the East Bay will have been following, you know, what you've been doing and have been trying to be supportive as much as we can, and also working with Gwen Kirk. So I wanted to say, you know, because San Francisco, our representative is Nancy Pelosi, and she tends to not co-sponsor anything. So do you have some strategies you're working to get her to move this forward in Congress? Have you approached Nancy Pelosi?
Yes, actually, Betty, well, I really want to thank you. You have, and the Wilt San Francisco team has just been so amazingly supportive in many ways. So I really want to thank you for that. And yes, I'm actually planning a kind of a grasstop meeting with some influential women from San Francisco, Ellen Friedman from the Compton Foundation and Terry Greenblatt from the Plowshares Fund, and possibly one of the Chinese American women that have been involved with the Comfort Women Justice Coalition to come to a high-level meeting with Nancy Pelosi. She is not going to sponsor the resolution, but we can bring to her some talking points of how she might not be so hawkish when it comes to the North Korea issue, that she's been saying things that have not been very helpful. And so we're going to need to do some kind of high-level meeting with her. So I'm working on that right now. We have a pretty wealthy philanthropist to the Democratic Party who is very close to the Nobel Women's Initiative who is working on that. So I hope to do that in the end of July when I'm in the Bay Area. And I will actually be giving a few talks. I'll be giving one in L.A. on July 27th. It's organized by Code Pink and Peace Action. And then another one in Denver on July 7th. And I'll be in the Bay Area the last week of July and the first week of August. So if there is an opportunity to do something together, I would be really happy to do that.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah. Okay, next we have Barbara Taft. Barbara is co-chair of our Middle East campaign, calling from Phoenix, Arizona area. Go ahead, Barbara.
Hi. Yes, as you said, does everybody hear me?
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. As you said, I am Barbara Taft, and I am with Greater Phoenix Wilt. Our branch has a number of people who are in touch with people from various countries in the world and with organizations that work with people from other countries. And I think it's very important, or I would think it's very important, to get local Korean people who are living in our areas to be involved in this and to show that kind of solidarity. And it occurs to me that one of the greatest points of outreach is the Korean churches in terms of growing this movement. Even just to my knowledge, I know of about 40 Korean churches here in our area, and I'm sure that I don't know of all of them. And I think, you know, most of their members, and especially their women's groups, have a deep interest in this subject. And I think maybe we could look at how we can help to work with some of these local groups. What do you think about that, Christine?
Oh, gosh, I would love that so much. But, you know, I was just, as you were speaking, I looked at the WIT list. I had mentioned earlier on my presentation that we had created a WIT list, and so I wanted to see if there were any members of Congress on that WIT list, and there are actually two. One is Kirkpatrick, and the other is Gallego. And our lobbyist seems to think that these two members of Congress could be moved to co-sponsor this resolution. So I would love to work with you to try to connect with some of those Koreans and those churches. I mean, it can go either way, because a lot of the Korean churches can be very conservative. They're anti-gay. They're, you know, on a range of issues. And but on the other hand, there have been lots of churches I work very closely with, United Methodists, Presbyterians, that have that are very pro-peace and very pro-engagement. So I would love to follow up with you and see if we can try to make something happen in Arizona, and especially to try to mobilize some of the, you know, I mean, just to let you know that the Korea Peace Now chapters across the country have been a combination of women's, like some women's groups and peace anti-war organizations, the faith community, and Korean American groups. So it's been a very diverse coming together of folks that have some consciousness and inspiration to end the Korean War, with obviously the Korean Americans that feel personally invested in this issue. So I would love to follow up with you. I'm just going to quickly put my email address on the chat room right now. So I would love it if you wouldn't mind reaching out to me directly.
Okay. I have one other thing, which is organizations that work with immigrants are another possibility of a good point of contact. We have a large functioning multinational group of people who are involved with the IRC, the International Rescue Committee, and I think reaching out to them is also something that would make a lot of sense.
Great. Thanks so much, Barbara. I hope you send me an email to try to figure out how we can move some of these Arizona members.
Okay, great.
Christine, if you will send us your list of where you see some wiggle room with Congress members, we can try and encourage our members in those areas to do the same thing you're talking to Barbara Taft about. We just need to match up where our branches are with where the members of Congress are that need some pushing.
That would be fabulous. I would be really happy to do that. So I just posted it right now on the chat room, but I'll follow up with Mary Beth and with Darian.
Great. Jane Doyle has her hand up again. Go ahead, Jane.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes. Yes.
Good. What happened before is that I was getting so much static on the phone that I couldn't tell that you had called my name. So I just switched over to my cell phone. I'm glad you can hear me. What I'm wondering about, because the President of the United States, whose name we take in vain often, has just yesterday decided, I think it was yesterday, was announcing, you know, what a wonderful relationship he has with Kim Jong-un, and then every other day he's calling him names. And I'm wondering, as you work on this campaign, what power in terms of what you're what you're getting from the North Koreans, what you are able to work on here. I guess my fear is how much can he wreck it, and how much are you able to just work around the things that he does?
It's a very good question. And, I mean, we basically have a... Oh, can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. I feel like I'm...
Yes.
I mean, we basically have a two-part strategy. And what one is, how do we neutralize the hawk, the Boltons, the Democrats, right, who say unhelpful things? So we want to try to neutralize them as much as we can. But we want to keep pushing for creating a political space for peace, because there hasn't been. We've been at war with North Korea for 70 years, and you can imagine how refined the propaganda and sophisticated it has become. So that is definitely one thing that we're doing. And the other strategy is we are, and I think this lines up nicely with what some of the work that you guys are doing, is we are convening a meeting next week in Washington, D.C. with some of the kind of big national peace organizations to start some messaging for the members, for the presidential candidates. And we've already been contacted by obviously two of them, Bernie Sanders, and the other is Mike Gravel, who is the former senator, or Gravel, sorry, the former senator, about some messaging. And so that's very exciting to us, because we do feel like, you know, there is some possibility, and that, you know, we have a president that is, I mean, we can't, there's no way around it. I mean, he says unhelpful, silly, and downright alarming things. And so, but that shouldn't, you know, I think our line has been, yes, Trump is chaotic, he's unpredictable. And, but the point is that the problem isn't him talking to Kim Jong-un, it's that he's not doing it well, or he's mismanaging it. And so what we need is smart diplomacy. We need an actual peace process. And so, I mean, if it gives you any hope, I mean, it's so crazy to say this, but the guy that he appointed to be the special representative on North Korea is a guy named Stephen Biegun. He's a former Ford executive. He used to work actually for the State Department during the Bush administration. He, you know, worked on Russia, but he actually, in most of the policy speeches this guy has delivered, he actually is the most pragmatic and that we have seen, frankly. I mean, even over the Obama administration. I mean, it has... North Korea has been basically stuck in the Cold War in terms of the U.S. policy towards it. I mean, the Obama administration didn't do anything to help the situation. And so even as crazy as Trump is, he wants so much there for it will be an advance for him for in terms of a foreign policy win. And, you know, there, even though he is absolutely horrendous on every issue, this has been an issue he has actually been right on and has actually said things that have helped our peace movement. He has called the joint military exercises war games or war drills. He has said things like the sanctions are impacting the North Korean people. I mean, you know, because he's so unhinged, he actually like says things that are actually truthful in some ways that no standing U.S. president has ever been willing to do. And so because he is, you know, I mean, even though he is part of the swamp, and but he isn't in some ways in terms of like trying to define himself away from like the John Bolton types. And so I don't know, it's very complicated, but I guess what we're trying to do is we're trying to pave the road by trying to engage with as many pragmatic members of Congress. We want to have a congressional strategy and mostly, obviously, engaging the Democrats because they have been very unhelpful, too. And I just wanted to say that yesterday there was a Asia Pacific Congressional Committee in Congress, and they had a hearing on divided families. And it was the first time that my colleague from AFSC, Dan Jasper, attended that hearing, and he said he could not believe the way that, in many ways, the conversation had changed so much about North Korea, where we realized that we need to actually abandon this whole CVID, complete verifiable irreversible denuclearization, before we see any progress towards peace, that we actually need peace to get to denuclearization. So that is actually a significant mental shift that we have been really pushing and wanting to see. And so we need to just, you know, sideline Trump as much as possible, but be willing to engage him and, you know, say that meeting Kim is the right thing. But now what we need is a different approach that doesn't demand the unilateral disarmament of North Korea before we actually make progress in peace.
Thanks so much for joining us tonight, Christine, and for helping us to begin to envision what a closer collaboration with Women Across the DMZ could look like. And hopefully we'll be working closely on some ways that we can support each other moving forward.
I would love that. Thank you so much. I really look forward to it. I just sent the whip list on the chat list, but I will forward it to Mary Beth and to Darian, and I look forward to being in touch with you guys about how we can collaborate, especially in key areas. Thank you so much.
There's one more question, I think, coming in for you. I'm sorry.
Okay,
just want to get it in before you go. Yeah. Ellen, go ahead.
Hi. I just want to say how much I personally agree with you and what you're doing, and a really wonderful WILF member by the name of Carol Erner, who was the chair of the Disarm and Wars Committee for many years and now is retired. But this has been an issue that she's been saying for a very long time, and she wanted me to send greetings to everybody. I spoke to her a while ago, so this is exciting that this work is getting done.
Oh, thank you so much, Ellen. And will you put her in touch with me? I mean, we need women that understand this issue and that, you know, it's like we are.
If you'll put your email on the text pad, then I will send it to her.
Yep, I just did it again right now. I'm serious. I really need as many of you that's willing to help us.
Where did we put it?
I just put it on, it's just Christine, Christine, at womencrossdmz.org.
Okay, there, I see it. You put it in the chat window, okay.
Yep, and you'll see all those members of Congress that we think we can move.
All right, well, I'll get in touch with you and have her get in touch with you.
Okay, fabulous.
Or I'll send you her information. That's probably better.
Great, thanks so much, Ellen. And thanks so much, Barbara, and thank you, everybody. You guys are really awesome and really need WILP to be with us.
Thanks, Christine. Have a good night.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.